Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope everyone is having a great start of the week. It is officially week 4, which I can't believe. It's very sunny outside, so please go outside and enjoy the sun. Today, I'm coming back with another rom-com review with a special guest, so please stay tuned for that. Before we get started, let's get through some ads, some PSAs, and some show promos. And we will get started. So here we go.
UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
We stand for peace, we stand for justice for the people of Palestine and for the upholding of international law.
On November 30th, join Irish for Palestine BC for a night of crack agus ciol, including trivia, music, dancing, and fundraising for an important cause. All funds raised will be donated to Medical Aid for Palestinians, a long-standing charitable organization responding to the humanitarian emergency in Gaza and Lebanon by providing on-the-ground medical supplies and complex care to children and families impacted by violence. Tickets are $15, and the event will be held in the function room of Foy's Irish Bar. To find out more, visit @IrishForPalestineBC on Instagram. That's @IrishForPalestineBC with a numerical 4. Saoirse don Phalastine. Devon Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat-worthy bops. This is the era of fempop, and Devon Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devon Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be swimming, but
on January 17th, UBC Radio CITR 101.9 FM presents our 24 hours of radio art programming, featuring innovative approaches to music and sound. It's 24 hours of spoken word, ambient, drone, field recordings, collage, plunderphonics, robocalls, voicemail fails, sound research, and noise. Listen live. CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. For more details and submission requirements, email us at radioart@citr.ca.
Tune your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Primiti or saxophone Len Lee. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalists, saxophonists, composers, and musicians of our great era since the 70s. Featuring artists such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Ayler, Solange, Ghostface Killah, Ornette Coleman, Sunny
Ryan. So she got the tune.
That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primiti or saxophone la nuit.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Leanin' with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a wonderful start of the week. Why don't we just get into the episode right away? So today I'm going to be doing a rom-com review. You know what? I would actually say that there's a lot of drama as well. So I guess it's like a romedy comedy. But yeah, I'm just going to get into it. Today we have a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me today, Jeff. My name's Aisha. I'm a third-year political science student here at UBC, and I love watching movies. So that's what we're here to do today. We're going to review a comedy/drama movie.
Yes. Do you mind giving the audience the title of the movie and then a brief summary of what it is about? I thought it was like called Kalho Naho, but I guess that's not the proper way to pronounce it.
I think you're doing a great job of pronouncing it, but for context, so I was looking through some of Jeff's like past podcasts and some of the movies that have already been on the roster, and every movie that I was thinking of talking about, I was like, it's been done, or like someone's heard of this. So I decided, why not bring some of my South Asian-ness to the podcast, and the movie that we're going to be talking about today is Kalho Naho, which translates to There Might Not Be Tomorrow, which is quite literally taken in the context of the movie throughout the entire film as well. It stars Shah Rukh Khan, Bollywood King, Preeti Zinta, and then Saif Ali as well. It's a very well-known movie within Bollywood, and like Jeff was saying earlier, it is a mix of comedy, drama, but if I was to give like a Sparks Note rundown of the movie, Naina, who is this young girl studying MBA in Brooklyn, she's getting her MBA degree, she is living there with her mom. Her dad recently passed away. The mom is running a restaurant, and it's not going so well right now. She meets this really cute guy named Aman. Aman helps them fix up the restaurant. He does a rebrand. Aman has a really nice friend named Rohit. Aman, we get to later find out in the movie, is dying from cancer, so he's not doing well. And Aman ends up falling in love with Naina. And because he doesn't want to see Naina alone in life after he passes away, he ends up sets her up with his best friend, Rohit. So we have a complicated love triangle that happens in the movie. And then we also have a bunch of drama that goes on the side. So Aman lies about getting married. You have Rohit, who sometimes doesn't feel comfortable with the fact that like he's not Naina's like first choice. And then Naina comes to terms with like the reality and finds out that Aman is sick. They end up getting, Naina and Rohit end up getting engaged, end up getting married, and then Aman passes away. And the movie ends on, honestly, like such a sad note, but throughout the entire film, there's laughter, there's great numbers, and I'm really excited to talk more about it.
Yeah, that was an excellent way to summarize the movie. I do want to ask, what do you mean by numbers? Is that just the way musical is said in Bollywood movies? What does that mean?
That's how I say it, but I don't think there's like a specific way to say it. That's what I grew up hearing my mom and my dad say it. I mean, different Desi parents might say it differently in different South Asian households. But like usually, specifically in Bollywood movies, and especially in Kalho Naho, there are like extended periods of like, you know, dance scenes. And like you have like a really good, like the movie is known for its soundtrack. So when I say numbers, I kind of mean like the musical part of the movie.
Oh, I see. That's pretty interesting. And you also said that the meaning of the title was...
So, Kalho Naho. So, Kal means tomorrow. Ho means... Actually, I'm just going to synthesize it together. My Urdu is not that amazing sometimes. But Kalho Naho means we might not have tomorrow.
Oh, I see. I wish I knew that before I saw the movie. There are times when I mean, I don't watch a lot of Bollywood movies, so... a lot of the times I kind of understand what the title means. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting to know what the title means. And now that I think back on the movie, it does relate to the overall theme of the entirety of what the plot is driven. That's really interesting. I didn't know about that. I guess we'll just get right into it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in particular that you enjoyed about the movie, whether it's related to the plot or the character? You didn't mention that Aman is the Bollywood king. I do recognize him, although I haven't seen a lot of Bollywood movies. But what do you think?
Yeah, SRK, Shah Rukh Khan is like very high-key, the king of Bollywood. But I think one of the reasons why I love this movie and why I recommended it to you as well is because of the specific spin it has on, like, a rom-com, right? In, like, most South Asian culture, you grow up in a very collectivist environment in the sense where, like, you're thinking about everyone. You're not just thinking about yourself. It's very much like when you make a decision, who does it impact and how will it impact them? And I personally think it was the way that Aman was like extremely selfless towards the end. Especially that one scene where, you know, he's passing away and like he's smiling on the bed because he knows that he's going to be with Naina in like the afterlife. But he's satisfied with the fact that like when he passes away that he has his best friend like looking after her and like they're going to have like a lovely long life together filled with so much love. That's super selfless. And I think sometimes I'm not used to seeing that like in like different narratives. Specifically, I would say in like Western films, I've seen like less of that. There's always like, you know, a toxic love triangle going on in terms of, I don't want like my best friend to get with like the girl that I like. Especially like what I was expecting in the movie when I first watched it for the first time when I was a kid was I thought that Aman was going to go at him. Like, I really thought that they were going to fight. But no, instead, he makes, like, the selfless decision of realizing that sometimes the bigger thing is to let someone you love go. And it was just really astounding for me because, like, he's such a big personality throughout the entire movie. And, like, honestly, like, there are moments where he's got, like, a really huge ego. And then you see him do, like, the most selfless thing ever. So that was, I really, really loved that aspect of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Most of the movies that I watch are Western movies, and there's a very fixed idea of, you know, who the protagonist is going to end up with, and it's quite self-evident while you see the movie. And I think it was very new for me as well when I realized that Aman was not the one who ended up with Naina, and it was actually Rohit. And I think that was very interesting, but it also made me question about the romance aspect of the movie, whether it was, in a way, following the cultural idea of the family where it's kind of arranged in a sense, because Naina still loved Aman, in my opinion. And I think the fact that she went with Rohit was, I don't know, it was kind of hard for me to swallow at the end.
I would have to agree with you there. I think when I first watched the movie for the very first time, I was pissed. I was like, what's going on? Like, you know, Aman's dying. Like, he should get the girl. Like, you know, he should die, like, happy. But I think as I've matured and as I've rewatched, like, the movie over the years, there is that sense of, like, it being an arranged marriage to, like, a certain extent where, like, Aman is setting Rohit up with Naina, even though Naina's heart is, like, fixated on Aman. That's, like, pretty evident, as you mentioned. However, I think that love, I think Rohit understands that love. And, like, he has the same love for Aman as well. My hot take is I think they're in a love triangle together. I don't think there's a love triangle centering, like, Naina. I think they all want each other. Like, Rohit loves him like a brother. We didn't see that toxicity that, like, I was kind of speaking about earlier that I was expecting the first time around that I watched the movie. But she also, in her own way, she learns that to love him is to let him go as well. Yeah,
I think that kind of goes to show how complex the relationship was between the three of them. But I also am curious about Naina, because in the beginning, I believe that this was because they're trying to follow this cultural idea of, you know, when to get married and what, you know, when you should focus on getting a partner. And throughout, I guess, the first couple minutes or maybe 25 minutes or so, Naina seemed like she didn't have any desire to get married or want a partner in particular. She was quite independent. She knew what she wanted. Obviously, she was studying. She had a best friend. And then all of a sudden comes Amen, who just changes the entire dynamic. I think there was like a mention where he was kind of compared to like an angel, or maybe it was just one of the comments that I read, but that really resonated with me. I feel like Amen wasn't even the character that came in as like a love interest. He kind of came in with a different type of vibe, I guess. And so I really wonder what it was that sparked Naina to actually look at both Amen and Rohit as like a romantic partner, and if being with Rohit was a capability that she had throughout the years and she just didn't realize it until she met Amen. What was your thoughts on that?
Okay, so a lot to unpack there. Yes, the first like 20 minutes of the movie, you see her like, also, by the way, the Brooklyn Bridge should have gotten like its own special credit. Oh my God, someone's like crying, they're at the bridge. Someone's happy, they're at the bridge. The movie was supposed to take place in Jackson Heights. Like, that was the one of the addresses on like the envelopes. Like a run from Jackson Heights to like the Brooklyn Bridge is like literally 4 hours, I believe. Don't quote me on that. But I do know that it's long. It's very long. And they're always at that stupid bridge. Anywho. But she's at that bridge at the start. You see her like running. You see her in like her girl boss moment. She's got the MBA book up. And then, you know, she's helping out her mom. And then you cut to the scene where, and like, I really did like the scene because I think this movie has a lot of tropes, love at first sight being one of them, but not quite, because for me, love at first sight necessarily, like, you would have to end up with the person that you kind of meet those. Nazar means like eyesight, like in Urdu. So you would have to end up with like the person that you meet your Nazar with. And that didn't end up happening because she went with Rohit. But I think that Aman was like a necessary phase that she needed to develop character. Like, you know, a lot of people don't like the scene where she goes out and she has like the time of her life and like she's like uptight throughout the entire like bar scene, and then, you know, you see like Aman and Rohit like help her get loose a little bit, and she's, well, it's like really cringy, like, but she's like downing tequila shots and having the time of her life, when in like reality you're probably going to be throwing up everywhere. But I think both of them were necessary for her to develop character and for her to actually enjoy life, because it just seemed like after her dad passed away, she was so fixated with helping her mom get to a place where like they didn't feel like they were constantly thinking about money or like how they were going to be supporting themselves. And I feel as if Aman helped her kind of break out of, there is more to life than just being in survival mode for like, for how long she was in survival mode for. And I would still say that she doesn't kind of leave that mentality until she ends up, until you see like the years pass by and she's like happily married with like Rohit and like old. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can transition into the ending as well, just briefly. I found it very, very refreshing finally to see an ending where it's placed after a couple decades later. A lot of the movies that I watch, it's quite ambiguous with how it ends, whether it's the protagonists end up together, but it's kind of the early stages of the relationship, so you don't know how that would progress throughout the time, you know, throughout the years that they probably, I'm assuming, are together. And I think it was very, very refreshing to see how 20 years later, she ends up, you know, talking to Gia about her first love, who is Amen. What did you think about the ending? Do you like endings that are, I guess, ambiguous in a sense where you as an audience can kind of interpret it your own way? Or was this ending something that you prefer where it's quite explicit in a way with how the characters end up?
So this was like a typical Bollywood ending, I would say. Like, if you were to characterize like the films in like the early 2000s, like all of like the famous like Shah Rukh Khan films, Salman Khan films, like they always have like a very clear ending. So I was happy with it. I mean, as a viewer, it leaves me guessing less. I also think that like as someone who like grew up watching South Asian and like South Asian movies and Bollywood movies, it was very much like I knew that I was going to get some form of closure towards the end, especially with like, you know, Aman passing away, because that caught me off guard. Like when I first watched the movie, I never thought it was going to end the way that it did. But I think like it is a general theme throughout, like, Bollywood movies that they like to leave, like, the viewer or the audience with some sense of, like, and they lived happily ever after the end.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice. Like I said, you know, I kind of had, like, a grounded idea of what the movie was trying to, tell me as an audience. And I kind of want to go back to Amon's character. I believe that's his name. Yes, Amon's character. He comes in very goofy, which I think makes the ending so much more sadder, because you can kind of see how he was masking a lot of the sadness and the terror that he was feeling due to his illness. And then he was kind of using his positive energy to kind of mask everything. There are a lot of scenes where the movie kind of signifies itself as a movie, because, well, kind of going to the restaurant, suddenly becoming so successful. I don't hate on that. I think I love, you know, those moments where it's, like, magical in a way, where, you know, someone comes in and changes the whole dynamic and saves the world type of trope, I guess. But I think that kind of speaks to the message of hope, and that directly aligning with Naina's character, where she just kind of lost hope after her father died. There was nothing that she was kind of looking forward to, or kind of was driving towards, I guess, instead of her MBA. What do you think about those scenes of, you know, portraying a very, like, fantastical aspect and just, like, a almost hard to believe situations within the film?
I honestly think that it was necessary, because, like, Amon was supposed to be, like, this out of world, like, experience for her, you know what I mean? This is gonna sound really morbid, but it kind of plays into, like, the trope of all good things don't last forever. And I think in certain aspects, like, the director, I believe Karan Johar directed this movie, I'm pretty sure, I don't quote me on that, we'll fact check that, but I do think there was, like, an intention to make the big things with Amon seem, like, really big, because that's what he just portrayed. He was larger than life in every sense when it came to, and, like, a part of it was 100% to, it was influenced by the fact that he was dealing with, like, crippling health issues, and he almost lived every moment as it were his last, which is why he took the opportunity to then go ahead and also, like, think about, you know, what would be of Naina after he's gone. And I think the restaurant plays, like, a huge part into it. When I first saw the scene, I was like, be for real? Like, no one's, like, flipping, like, an entire restaurant upside down with, like, a brand change. But, again, it just speaks to, like, this, like, what you were saying, like, this image of hope. And, like, that's what Amon represents for Naina, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, it says that it was directed by Nikhil Advani. Are you familiar with that director? I don't know. Okay, well, anyways, I do agree with you on that, with, you know, the aspect of Amon being this very positive person was a necessary part, and how the things that he was doing was pretty influential with Naina's character as well. I want to go into the family dynamics right now, because I found it quite infuriating, but also couldn't really see the relevance towards how poorly the grandmother treated Gia for the fact that Gia wasn't, like, a blood family, and how that kind of relates to the romance with the protagonists. What do you take from that aspect of how the grandmother's relationship with Gia, and, like, the conflict that she was going through with Naina's mother, and then kind of connecting it to the three characters and their love triangle?
Man, can I just say I love Gia? I love Gia a lot. Like, that last scene where Gia goes, I was actually his first love, because Rohit did tell her that, like, you know, you're my first love. He was always playful like that throughout the movie. I think the portrayal of, like, the mother-in-law specifically was done, like, with a very, it was done through, like, a very stereotypical, like, archetype, in my opinion. There is, like, this narrative within like different South Asian spaces that the mother-in-law is always like harsh or she's very overly critical. And like I could get into like the whole idea of like someone being blood related versus not blood related and like why that's taboo in like South Asian culture. But I think for me what like really stood out like throughout the entire like relationship dynamic is when Nana finally called both of them out, like her grandmother and her mom, for like fighting consistently ever since like her father passed away. And I think moving forward from that, you see both of them start to like realize like what impact their infighting is having on like their what's left of their family. And I thought that that was really powerful because there is a lot of stigma against like speaking up against like folks who might be older than you or like your elders. Like there's always like this notion of you have to respect your elders, you got to follow what they say, you know, even with marriage to a certain extent as well. And I think it was really I really loved seeing her finally stand up and like say something and be like, hey, like the way that you're treating people in this household and the way that you're treating each other is not right. Like we lost someone super important to us. How do we, like, this should be bringing us together, not farther apart. So I think that that was, like, an important dynamic to portray as well, because it is, like, a very, in my opinion, a real reality that, like, most South Asian families do end up going through. So, yeah, I appreciated, like, the nuance there.
I think there was a lot, I think that aspect of the mother-in-law, you know, treating Gia really goes to show, it's like a way to redefine what love really is. I think there's this preconception of, you know, when your family, love is like an inevitable thing that's just within that environment. And I think you can clearly see that the mother-in-law does not like Gia at all, for the sole fact that she's from like a different mother. She's from not from her sons or something like that. It was, either way, she was not the blood child of her family, and so she didn't accept it. And I think Gia has a lot to learn of what it means for someone to truly love her and to really accept who she is. I actually want to ask a question, because I couldn't really understand. How did Amin know about the father's affair, I think? There was a moment where he was confronting the mother-in-law of how Gia is actually the blood related daughter or whatnot. Do you remember that scene?
I do remember that scene. I don't remember how he found out.
It doesn't explicitly say how Amin knew about it. I was just curious, do you think there was a relationship in the past with Amin and Nana's father? How did he even know about that? And then there was like this whole scene of like them crying and like the grandmother, you know, everyone's regretting her decision of treating Gia that way.
That's going to be, like, an itch that I'm going to have to scratch later. Because you're right. Like, I see the scene in my head. He's, like, he's going off. And then, like, everyone's, like, sobbing. I forget how he finds out.
Yeah, because basically the mother-in-law assumes that Gia is someone who Naina's mother brought, like, almost, like, adopted to the family. But then Amin was the one who said, it was your son who had an affair, he had a daughter, and, you know, the son's wife, she was the one who brought her in. And so I was like, okay, but how did you know that? Because it's not like Amin was the same age as, I'm assuming, like, within the range of Nana, which means that the father probably was much older than him. So I just couldn't understand how he got that information. So I guess that was one moment where I was a little confused about.
But that's like so Bollywood core. Like, I think the side quests always end up happening. And then the other side quest that really like threw me for a loop was like him faking having a wife. So that Nana could like get over him. And then him like confessing to the fact that it was like a fake marriage. I thought that that was like really interesting. I mean, I get it. Like, he did it to... Well, it was written by Karan Johar, and it was directed by Nikhil, so you were right. But I think it was definitely there to, like, you know, add a dramatic effect to, like, the story and the plot line. But there were definitely a lot of, you know, different storylines in, like, conjunction to, like, the main storyline where I was like, whoa, like, we're going one way, now we're going another way, and then we're going back to, like, the original plot. And that was one of them, the fake wife, really. caught me off guard.
I think the fake wife scene caught me off guard so hard that I actually thought that he had a fake wife. So when he said that, yeah, you know, he was showing, you know, the picture of him and, first of all, another question, why does he have a picture of him and his doctor? I don't understand that kind of scene. But yeah, he was like, yeah, this, I came to New York because of my wife. And so I was like, okay, maybe he does have a wife. She later realizes that it was his doctor. And well, I don't think Naina knows that it was his doctor. She just knows that when she brought the husband over, it wasn't Aman. And I'm like, okay. So then like there's this whole close-up of her face to show like that dramatic moment, which I want to get into. A lot of the movies that I watch, particularly in Western movies, I don't think there's a lot of those zoom up close-ups, you know, within the characters' faces showing their shock. Do you enjoy those scenes? Does it actually give you that more of like that dramatic emotion when you watch the scenes? Do you like it?
I think Bollywood just would not be the same without it. As much as sometimes I'm like, oh, this is going on for way too long, or like, you're over exaggerating, I'm also like, it's so quintessential to like the culture, to a point where I'm expecting like the da da da, or like the and like it's zoomed in on the character's face to the point where you can see every single one of their pores, and like it's stuck there for 5 seconds. I think like it fits the film type. Yeah, I think it fits the film type.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't watch a lot of Bollywood movies, but there's definitely a lot of dramatic moments. I think the first thing that I realized, I don't know if it's particularly because it's a Bollywood movie, but the tears, for some reason, I just couldn't...
Can we talk about that, actually?
Yes, I would love to talk about it. I don't want to say it didn't seem ingenuine. I just thought that it was...
No, Aman's weird, like, half-smile slash, like, cry kills me every single time. Because his eyes are welling up, and then he's like... like, he's, like, you know, gasping for air while, like, trying to half-smile. And, well, that's how he dies, too, technically. Like, he's half-smiling, and, like, he's got, like, tears in his eyes. But I feel like it's just, like, the... It became, like, such a signature look for, like, Shah Rukh Khan afterwards as well, where, yeah, like, that was his face, where, like, he literally looks like he's about to bawl and smile at the same time. Very interesting choice.
Yeah, no, there's also a scene where he's, it's towards the end, where he's confronting Naina, but he's, like, really sweaty, and, like, he's, like, flooding with sweat all over himself while he's, like, crying, and I'm like, wait, what is he doing out here? Like, all of a sudden, he's just, like, really ill. You could see that. How is he outside? And I think, I don't want to say it was funny, but it was, I was like, what is going on here? But yeah, I think it was, overall, I think it was a great movie to watch. There's a lot of things to unpack, whether it's within the characters, family, and then the whole love triangle. But yeah, I mean, do you have anything else that you want to particularly talk about or found quite interesting in the movie?
There's nothing in specific. I just think that for folks who are listening, if you haven't watched a Bollywood movie, I would suggest starting off with Galhona Ho. It is 3 hours long, so I will, like, preface that. But it's a really digestible one. And I think it's very Bollywood. Like, if you're trying to understand a little bit more about, like, the culture and, like, the movie scene, I would definitely start with this film. Then I would move on to, like, some of the other early 2000 movies as well. Who knows if you'll take me up on my offer of watching another one. Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham is also really great, but not really... It's not... That's a really sad one. Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham literally translates to sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm sad. So the titles are always very literal with, like, Bollywood movies, but... Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to bring something a little bit different to, like, the rom-com aspect. I think this is, like, a romantic comedy at heart. You laugh, you cry, you laugh again, and then you reflect. Yeah, it's a really... I think it's, like, a one-of-a-kind movie, and they've stopped making movies like this in Bollywood. But, yeah.
Do you think it's, like, that whole banter of comedy and romance that makes this movie special in terms of being a Bollywood movie? Because I don't really have a lot of Bollywood movies to compare this with. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, my initial thought was there's just, like, a constant set of, like, conflict and issue that arises and, like, misunderstanding that initially seems to get resolved, but then it's you know, coming back up again. Is this kind of whole idea of just going back and forth something that goes on quite frequently in Bollywood films?
I would say it's not a Bollywood movie if it doesn't have drama in it and, like, you know, relatives aren't, like, dramatically coming for each other at their throat. You have to have that in there. I think what else, and, like, I'm actually curious to know if you have a favorite. I really, 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 really loved the soundtrack of this movie. Like, there are a couple of songs that I love. I'll speak about them in a minute, but I want to know if there was, if there were any, like, tracks that kind of stuck with you throughout the movie.
That's a great question. To be really honest with you, they all sounded, it's not that they sounded the same. I just couldn't, well, first of all, I couldn't understand the lyrics of it. I kind of read a little bit of the subtexts or the, you know, the subtitles of it. But I think there was a soundtrack called Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman.
Yeah, I kind of like that one since, you know, I'm quite familiar with that track. And I think that was a very cute track to put in as well. But yeah, I mean, is there a specific meaning of, you know, through these soundtracks that you enjoyed about? What was it about it?
I think what I really liked was, like, Place and Time. Like, the music made sense when it was there. The soundtracks were good. Like, you know, Pretty Woman is, like, a song outside of, like, they, like, Desi-fied it. They, like, fully, like, I think it's sung in Hindi, but sometimes Hindi and Urdu sounds, like, the same to me, but I digress. But, like, they had their own version now because, like, Pretty Woman, deko deko, not, like, it was, like, really, really cute. And then, you know, the main title song for the movie, like, Kal Ho Na Ho, was, like, really sad and, like, really good. And, like, that became, like, a Bollywood staple. And then It's the Time to Disco. Like, that was, like, pretty big as well when, like, they're partying it up in the club. And then Mahi Ve, like, when they're dancing at the wedding. Like, you have all of, like, the essential components you need for, like, an excellent Bollywood film. You have, like, the numbers that make you laugh, that make you cry, that make you dance. You have the scary mother-in-law. You have family drama where they're going at each other's necks again. You have a crazy love triangle. And then you have someone who passes away because they decided to do something selfless. Like, it's like a feel-good movie. It's really good.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things going on. For me, I guess, actually, I'll ask this first. Do a lot of Bollywood movies contain musicals in them? For me, I wasn't quite intrigued with the music itself. I love the dances to the point where I kind of want to learn how to dance like that. It seems like such a fun dance. It's very expressive, that the way they move. Is that kind of something that goes on with Bollywood movies often, with, like, those musical dances?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think certain, like, Bollywood films are, like, defined by, like, the dances that they're able to do in, like, the movie and the music that goes behind it. So, for sure, like, it's a very definitive part of, like, the culture and, like, the film industry. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I think that one was what stuck with me. I kind of want to go into, well, first I want to ask, do you, I guess because you're familiar with a lot of Bollywood films, did you ever feel overwhelmed about how many things were going on with the whole relationship? And then I don't even know if she mentioned if she continued on her MBA or if any of this was affecting her studies at all. What do you think about those? Do you like it when it's just completely just chaotic, so many things going on at once? And then in a way it did work out at the end.
I think if you're looking for, like, a movie that's, like, realistic and makes sense, maybe don't turn towards, like, major Bollywood movies, because, like, the entire premise of it is it's supposed to be dramatic. It's supposed to be, like, out of reach to a certain extent, and, like, the music then reflects that. I think for me, personally, I grew up, like, having that connection and culture through, like, my mom and my dad. I will say my dad liked more of, like, the Bollywood movies that centered around, like, more, like, action thriller topics, and my mom really loved movies like Kal Ho Na Ho or, like, Dilwale. Like, she really liked, like, the old classic Bollywood movies. So growing up, like, to also preface, I'm Pakistani, I am South Asian, but I don't think I ever made that explicitly clear. But growing up and then, like, watching kind of, you know, movies that were coming out of, like, Hollywood or, like, mainstream media here, like, within North America, and then kind of comparing it to like South Asian like movies, it threw me for a loop as a kid, because like you're seeing two different things. Like I was watching at home, like, you know, these really long, again, 3 hours, right? These really long movies with like these insane like dance numbers and like soundtracks and like these really complex plots. And then at the same time, like I was going to the theater and like watching other movies. I'm trying to think of like a real, like, for example, no, that's not a great, I was going to say Pitch Perfect, but I was like, you know what? I can make the argument that Pitch Perfect's low-key kind of like a Bollywood movie. It's a stretch. It's a stretch.
Yeah, I watched Pitch Perfect like a couple months ago, but I guess.
But not Pitch Perfect. I would choose another movie that was mainstream at the time that maybe didn't have a dedicated like musical aspect to it. But the structure of movies were just fully different like when engaging with them, so... Yeah, it's a different world, but I think it's a really fun one.
Yeah, I think for what I got with watching Kahul na Ho is it seems like there's a lot of cultural references going on within the movie, which I could kind of relate it to my own culture. Definitely, I feel like a lot of cultures have some sort of overlap with certain aspects of, you know, how they practice certain things. But do you think that's why you particularly enjoyed the movies or the genre of Bollywood movies, because you can kind of relate yourself within the cultural aspect of it? Or what aspect of the movie did you particularly think that drew you in to this?
I think, of course, 100%, like, there is that cultural connection there. But I'm, like, fairly certain, as someone who just likes to watch, like, different forms of media, I would have made my way around to Bollywood one way or another if, like, I wasn't grown up with it. I think the format of it is just so different. You know, it's one of, like, the biggest film industries in, like, on, like, the planet. And the storytelling is very unique as well, as we kind of talked about throughout, like, the last little bit. I really enjoy the collectivist perspective that sometimes Bollywood movies portray, specifically this one in general. Again, right, like, when I first started watching it, I was not expecting Aman to be, like, so selfless to the point where he's literally, like, I love you so much to the point where I want you to be happy without me, and that's what brings me peace. And I really enjoyed, like, how some of those cultural, like, trends and norms kind of made it into the aspect of, like, the movie. Yeah.
All right. I guess I'll get into the last question, which is, if you were to characterize the movie by choosing one genre, whether it's, like, comedy, romance, love, or any other genre that you can think of, what is one thing that you would describe this movie as, or one theme?
Oh, that's hard.
I guess I'll give you some time to think about it. For me, ironically, I don't know. The romance was there, definitely there. It was very self-evident. But I think what drew me in was the drama, but not necessarily the negative aspects of the drama. It was kind of... The movie, I think, gave a very great representation of what life in general is like. And so the fact that Aman was able to sacrifice his selfish wants and desires of wanting to be with Naina was a very strong, impactful moment for me to kind of realize that, you know, love can work both ways, whether it's, you know, for yourself or for others. And I think the love that she ends up taking with Rohit was, I guess, the more smart, or I guess it's the more, it just makes more sense in a way, because mm-hmm. you know, he's dying. Why would he want, or why would Naina want the pain of, you know, loving someone for such a short period of time, knowing that they're going to be gone soon? And so I guess, you know, the decisions that they have to make within the context of love, and, you know, accepting the fact that they have to let people go, I think that was that whole drama of life really just encapsulates like the whole movie as like an entirety. But I think that was kind of what struck with me. I don't think I got too much of like the butterflies in your stomach romance type of movies that I usually get from a lot of these, where it's like, oh, like, you know, I'm so glad that the protagonists ended up together. It's more of like a broader implication of, you know, what kind of mindset you should have when you're living your life, and the mm-hmm. sacrifices and the decisions that you end up have to face and decide upon. So I think that was quite nice for me.
I think I really like your answer. I do agree. It is like it's like a reflection slash like the reality of like life kind of piece when it comes to the movie. I'm going to still stick with romance. I think like we think about romance in like one way, which is like the aspect of like having like a romantic relationship, the way that you think about the word romance. But I think that there were other aspects of like, not to like say like the 1700 version, like the 1700 version definition of like romantic, but you know, like Woodsworth, like frolicking in like the nature kind of romantic, where I think Amon had like such a romance for life, you know, like he felt as if, because he was like running out of time to live, so he really loved the life that he was trying to live, and like, you know, tried to at least fall in love with like the type of person that he was and the types of things that he was doing. And I find that romantic. I think the relationship between like Nena and her mom, I find that really sweet and really romantic. Like, you know, both of them looking out for each other in that context of like the household. Gia as well, right? Like Nena was such a good like older sister figure to her. And then I also see like the romance, of course, like, you know, the more obvious one is like the love triangle between Rohit, Aman, and Nena. But in my perspective, I don't even think it's like a love triangle. I think it's like I think it's Aman and Nena falling for each other. Aman understanding that it would be selfish for him to, you know, be with her because he's going to pass away because of his condition. And then unconditionally, like, you know, also loving Rohit and wanting the best for him, seeing that, like, he likes Nena and setting them up to, like, live a happy life where they have kids. And I just think that there is, like, a romantic aspect to the movie in general when it comes to you only got one life, so you gotta live it well. Yeah.
No, I think that's a really... I love your answer. I love it when you said... You thought that it was so romantic for the way that Amon viewed life and how he appreciated every moment. And I think that is most definitely romantic. But yeah, we have a couple minutes left. So we'll kind of wrap up the movie review for here. So for a couple minutes, I actually do a very small segment with all of my guests where I do like a would you rather segment. So I'm going to give you a couple questions. It's going to happen quite fast. So the only instructions are that if I give you the options, just make sure to answer it as quick as possible.
Okay.
But are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. So would you rather have the ability to speak to a dolphin or a shark?
A shark.
Is there a reason why?
Yeah, I want to understand, like, if the shark can give me any answers as to why the killer whale is the Canucks mascot. I don't get it.
Oh.
I've never looked into it. I don't want to look into it. I'm an Oilers fan. I'm sorry if this, like, drives traffic away from, like, your page. But, I don't know.
No, I'm sure it won't.
The killer whale has always turned me off, despite the fact that it is a killer whale. Mm. Anywho, very controversial opinion.
All right. Would you rather be friends with a lion but be terrified of cats or have a pet sloth that is always causing trouble?
A pet sloth that is always causing trouble.
Have you seen a sloth before?
They're so cute.
Oh.
Oh.
They're kind of scary for me. I think they kind of look a little bit scary.
Really? I think that they're so adorable. And like, what kind of trouble? They're so slow. Like, I feel like you can stop them before they start causing the trouble.
I don't know. Maybe this sloth that you'll get is going to cause a lot. The next one is, would you rather swim with a jellyfish in the ocean, but always have like a force field around you so you'll be able to breathe in the ocean, or ride on the back of a flying whale through the clouds?
Ride on the back of a flying whale through the clouds. How is that even like?
Nice. I mean, a lot of people love to explore the ocean since it is a very mysterious, dangerous, dark place.
That's exactly why I wouldn't want to explore the ocean. Oh my god.
No, the ocean does scare me a bit. Next one is, would you rather spend a week on a deserted island with all the food and luxury you need but no Wi-Fi, or go on vacation in a busy city full of tourists with constant access to social media?
So this is how you know I've matured. Give me the island. Give me the island. No Wi-Fi. Let me disconnect.
Yeah, no, I think I might choose the island as well. But the next one is, would you rather go on a time-traveling vacation to the Jurassic period or to the year 3000 to see future technologies?
I thought you were going to end that off with the Jonas Brothers, to see the Jonas Brothers, because they have a song called The Year 3000. Anywho, I would go to the Jurassic era. I had a dinosaur phase as a kid.
Okay, cool. Do you have a specific dinosaur that you know about or like?
It's a basic answer, but I do like a good stegosaurus. Mm. They're big, they're sweet.
What are stegosauruses?
They're herbivores, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Okay, the next one is, would you rather have the ability to pause time but still age, or live forever but be unable to stop time?
Pause time and still age. I think living forever is a very scary concept. I'm not Edward.
Yes. For those of you, Edward is the vampire in Twilight.
Yes.
The next one is, would you rather be able to talk to anyone but only while in complete darkness, or read minds but only while in a loud, crowded space?
Read minds. You know, that could be like a double-edged sword, because then you're consistently like overthinking what everyone is saying. But now I know what everyone is saying, so why would I be overthinking it?
Yeah. That's actually a great answer. The next one is, would you rather eat your favorite food for every meal but never taste anything else again, or eat a new and exciting dish every day, but at least randomly 6 meals that you eat within the week are not something that you enjoy?
The first one. I'm a really picky eater.
Oh, I see. Do you have a favorite food? What kind of food do you like?
I will never, ever get sick of pizza. Ever.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, it's so good.
Pizza is my favorite food.
Mine too.
Where do you get your pizza?
Oh, controversial answer. Hey, if we're going fancy, like if it's a treat, and this is takeout, okay? This is specifically in the realm of takeout. Getting Pizza Hut growing up was always a treat, but like I love a good Papa John's Domino's moment.
Wow. Me too.
Yeah.
Domino's for me.
So good.
Interesting. All right. The next one is, would you rather only be able to eat food that's blue or food that's shaped in a square?
Food that's blue.
You would rather only eat food that's blue?
Yeah, dude. Blue raspberry. Well, I don't think that they actually exist.
No, I mean like the color blue. Like whatever you eat is blue.
I mean, blueberries are pretty good.
Yes.
A Gatorade.
So you would eat a pizza that's blue?
Why not? Blue cheese exists.
You like blue cheese?
No.
Okay. Okay. The last one is, would you rather have a pizza with an unlimited selection of toppings, but the crust is always soggy, or a perfectly crisp crust, but with just one topping?
I love my pizza cheese, and that's how I eat it, so it's going to have to be the crisp pizza, or the crusty pizza with one topping or no topping. There we go.
Do you prefer pizza that's crispy, or do you just don't mind if it's crispy or soggy as long as it's pizza?
I think for me, it's a bunch of things, right? Like, for example, if the crust is, like, soggy, then, like, the cheese and, like, the sauce has to be top tier. But if the crust is great and, like, the cheese and, like, the sauce is mid, you know, one can kind of make up for the other. They're all working together.
Awesome. That's a great answer. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on my show. We are unfortunately out of time. I hope you had a lot of fun.
I did. Thank you awesome. For having me.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This was Lean In with Jeff. I'll see you guys all next week. Have a wonderful rest of the week, everybody. Bye-bye.